Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Okay, page 14 of the question and answers. So here in part of his thing is, everyone, regardless of his position, should hear Krishna Katha. Especially the topmost transcendentalists who are uninterested in anything material, take pleasure in hearing and chanting about the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami offers himself as an example of an impersonalist who is attracted to Krishna Katha. To advance through hearing Krishna Katha, which even an impersonalist can do, and thus advance to Bhagavata realization, one must hear Krishna Katha from the correct person, a realized devotee. For the result of such hearing is that the hearer's faith becomes established in Krishna. Both the speaker and hearer must be qualified, and the hearer understands everything, not exactly intellectually, but by Krishna's mercy due to a submissive inquirer's and serving mood. The hearer's main qualification for advancing to Krishna's direct service through attachment to him by hearing about him is that he should be a devotee and possess faith in the process of devotion. One should hear the Bhagavatam from beginning to end. The conclusion is that the doubtless method of success for all is that one, regardless of whether he is a devotee, a materialist, a yogi, or a jnani, should hear about Krishna from authorities and then offenselessly chant about Krishna. Okay, so those who are uninterested in the mundane, then they can always be absorbed in this hearing and chanting. Because basically you're going to hear and chant about what's important to you, what you value. That's what's going to be on your mind, that's what will be talked about. So if the transcendental is what is on the mind, then transcendental will be what you'll talk about. Does that make sense? So that's why it says that the topmost transcendentalists who are uninterested in anything material take pleasure in hearing and chanting about the Lord. That they'll get, that will be their pleasure. One, it looks at two ways. There's one is you can look at it that even their transcendental, they still take pleasure in hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, therefore proving that the Lord's pastimes are transcendental. Right? The other is that they take pleasure in it because there's nothing mundane to get in the way. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. Then, but that hearing must come from the correct source, because transcendental is not just the words that are there, the references or that. This is tattva, that's knowledge. But depending upon one's perception, even you are hearing about Krishna, if the perception's wrong, then that aspect of Krishna is not transcendental. Right? It means we see in the Brahma Samhita that the Pancha Upasana is explained, but in connection to Krishna. So you have the element, you have Narayan, this, let's see, there's a name, Satya Narayan Puja, yeah. You see, it's very popular in India, you've probably seen Satya Narayan Puja, I don't know if you've ever seen. You see, generally you see the a forearm form of the Lord standing there, and then there's a little yajna going on in front, and there's some people sitting there doing the yajna, right? But it's not like, you know, they're not great sages in that. They're just like some pious householders, right? Have you ever seen a poster like this or anything? Yeah. So that's Satya Narayan Puja. That's worshipping Lord Vishnu, who is situated in the mode of goodness, right? So this is what, the even though it appears to be personal worship, and those kind of persons you could talk to and very easily make into devotees, because they don't really distinguish, but the people who have got them to do the Satya Narayan Puja are generally impersonalists, and their idea is that Vishnu is simply the manifestation of the mode of goodness of the Brahman. But does that make sense? But Brahman in his pure state has no form, no this, no that. Right? But when it takes on, then it comes, the topmost mode of goodness aspect of Brahman in the material manifestation is Vishnu. Right? So at least they'll give them the top, even in the material world. But transcendental, they'll say no. Does this make sense? So you have to hear from the right sources. Just because it's about Krishna, if it's not coming from the right source, it doesn't carry the potency. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, we don't hear from them. We don't recommend others hear from them. But it's not that such persons necessarily are unsavable. Right? It means if that person who always likes to talk about Krishna, but they're not connected to the parampara, if you can get them to connect to the parampara, then they're already talking about Krishna. But now it has the proper potency. Does that make sense? But until that's there, then it's words that seem like, but it's not. It's just like Maya may look like the spiritual, but it's not. Right? Does that make sense? In the material world, a tree has a trunk and branches and twigs and leaves and fruits and flowers and bark and, you know, some color and all that. It does in the spiritual world, it's reflected from there, but this one's not real. Right? That one is. Does that make sense? So therefore, then the name, form, qualities, pastimes that are described by people who are not connected to the chit potency, then it's only a reflection. Does that make sense? So that's why we'll deal with such people, but we know that their connection's not proper. But that they like being connected, that's good. You know, they've connected through some improper source. So it's just a matter of connecting to the proper source. You don't have to change. Oh, it's all nonsense. You shouldn't. We should hear from the right source. These people are not the right source. But hearing Krishna Katha, that's very good. That makes sense? In other words, in the preaching, you don't throw out the whole system that they're following, because the system's bona fide. But the system is not properly connected, therefore it's useless. Does that make sense? You have a machine, and it's a good machine, but it's not plugged in. So the problem is not the machine, the problem is not it's not plugged in. Does that make sense? So if our purpose is not to remain in the material world, then our interest in Krishna Katha will be, more natural. Right? And that heard from proper source, then that will give us direct connection to Krishna. Right? This is very important, this element of what direct connection means. Direct connection doesn't mean it's you and Krishna and there's nobody in between. Right? But it doesn't mean that there's somebody in the way between you and Krishna. Does that make sense? So just like this. The grandchild can have a direct connection to the grandfather. And go up, talk to them, sit on their lap, play with them, laugh, joke, and it's direct. But is their relationship direct? You understand? They have a direct connection, but they don't have a direct relationship. The grandchild is the child of the grandfather's child. Does that make sense? That's why they're the grandson. Right? And if that child has a child, then the great-grandfather, they still have a direct contact, but the relationship's not direct. Now it's one more removed. But the contact is any less direct? Right? Great-grandfather won't play with the great-grandchild? Does that make sense? It's very important, because generally devotees tend to take one or the other. You know, it's like we're servant of the servant, 1,000 times removed, we're way in the back of the bus and all that, which is fine, that's the way it is. But that doesn't mean that you may not be direct, you can't walk up to Krishna and talk to him directly. You know? And the others who just, no, we just want to contact Krishna directly, so they don't like this other one. But the point is when you are connected to Krishna through the devotees, means, in other words, your relationship with Krishna is indirect, then Krishna will directly deal with you. But if you don't come through the devotees, he won't deal with you. He's not interested. Does that make sense? Okay? So that's, it's important to understand that. So then you'll get that direct service, because it's all being done to Krishna. So it's, that's simultaneous. It's direct, but at the same time it's not. It's through. So accommodating that, then it's, becomes very nice. Does that make sense? So that way one can accommodate the spiritual master, the previous acharyas, Lord Chaitanya, it all fits nicely, but at the same time the contact can be direct. You know, does that make sense? If it's appropriate. Is that okay?
Well, when you were saying in the beginning that the wrong interpretation of the, that everything comes from the Brahman. And the Patanjali, the main sentence is that everything is a kartavya. That nothing can come from a source that doesn't have the element in the beginning. Like a child cannot come unless the mother already has all the ingredients to reproduce. So how is possible, how is that they can believe that it's impersonal when there is so much personality there, obviously comes from the source, you'll be personal. But they have completely missed the point.
Yeah. Well, that's the yogis. So the jnanis are different. The yogis accept the transcendental form of the Lord, but their goal is the same as the impersonalists. So the impersonalist wants to merge into the Brahman because that's all they know that is there. But the yogis want to merge into the Lord, the Lord's body. So they accept him as transcendental and accept that he has a form, but they want to merge into him. So it's the same thing. That's why we generally, yogis, jnanis, we put them in the same category. Because if a yogi wants to serve the Lord as a devotee, then they're simply using the yogic process to elevate themselves out of the material world. But once they're out of the material world, the process they'll follow and the devotee on the Brahma Buddha platform will be the same. It's just a matter of whether you follow sadhana bhakti as it's given by the acharyas or you follow the Patanjali yoga. You can do either. And you'll get to the, means getting out of the material world, they'll both do the same thing, because both of them are naishkarmya. Because the Ashtanga yoga system up to dhyana is actually karma yoga, because you're engaging the body and senses and the mind. So that I think, what's that? Yoga Rudha, right? So that's karma yoga, so that it's supposed to be naishkarmya, because you're supposed to be celibate, you're just doing it for the purpose of that. So they're following the process of naishkarmya, but using Patanjali. We're following the process of naishkarmya, but we're functioning according to Narada. You know, so we use Pancharatra, like that. So the technique of the externals of it are different, but the actual process is the same. So they're personalists on one level, but at the same time, because they want to merge, then it's another, right? But if they accept him as the supreme person, they want to serve him, then after they have darshan of him, they surrender to him, and then they go on. We see in the Bhagavatam, then there's so many couples that do that. You know, 60,000 years, they meditate, see the Lord, and then carry on with devotional service, like that. Right? Is that okay. Okay. So here's point as this the doubtless method. So that's important also, is that we don't have doubt that something else is necessary. The devotional process, hearing about Krishna, will elevate us out of this material world. It will do it. Right? Guaranteed. So we don't have to do anything else. At the same time, is by hearing about Krishna, it will develop that affection for Krishna, attraction to Krishna. That will then take us into the transcendental realm, right? Because there's no use getting out of here and then being standing out in Brahman, right? Does that make sense? Because there'll be no attraction to get into Vaikuntha. You're happy to be out of the material world, you know, but how long can you be happy to be out of the material world? Right? It's chaos. Complete madhouse, you know, wherever it is, out on the street or at school, wherever you are. And then you finally get home, you close the door, you close the curtains, you just lay down in your bed. Ah, nice, peace. How long can you stay there before you want to go out and interact with people again? Even though it was crazy and insane, right? You're happy to get out, but it's not long before you're back out with the people. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Getting out of the material world means you'll get out, but you'll come back because the soul needs to interact. Because the Brahman is only Sat, it's eternity. That's all it is. So the Brahman is very happy to just be Brahman. You understand? Does nothing, because it's only Sat. That's all it has to do. It's eternal, and it's doing its eternalness, so it's happy. Right? But the living entity is Sat Chit Ananda. Right? That was interesting. Just took and Ananda and put it together. So that means Ananda comes from interaction. Right? And chit means that there's activity. Right? Ananda is coming from, the chit potency is generating the Ananda. By interacting, then Ananda is coming. So the living entity has to be active. They can't not be active. Does that make sense? So then we should have this faith that if we follow this, we will get out of here, we will go back to Godhead. We don't need a separate process. You know what I'm saying? Other things can be engaged in the Lord's service, elements of the Vedic literature, in that it helps us connect the conditioned nature to Krishna to the process of Naishkarmya. Right? The Vedic literatures are there, so that's knowledge. You apply that knowledge, then that becomes activity. And if you are doing it for the transcendental purpose, it's Naishkarmya. Does that make sense? Right? So that's what the other lit is, only to help, because the devotional process itself is enough if we're just absorbed in that. But because we may be distracted by other material situations, therefore the scriptures give us how to deal with those material situations according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, right? That connects them to the Lord. If it's been, so there's knowledge. It's connected to the Lord. It's being done for His satisfaction. And so it also acts to liberate us from the material world. It won't get us into the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? It means you deal with your family or your money or your position or anything according to the Shastra without wanting to, how you say, without desiring the result, it won't get you Krishna, but it will get you out of the material world. Does that make sense? That's why it's inferior. That's aparavidya. It's not transcendental. But it's aparavidya, it's connected to para, so it will liberate you. Naishkarmya will liberate you. But to get into the spiritual world means Krishna Katha. Because only the name, form, quality, past, that will get you into the spiritual world. Because you have to like Krishna. Right? You can't get into the spiritual world because you don't like the material world. Does that make sense? It means you don't like your country. You can go to another country and proclaim that. That will get you out of your country. But you won't become a citizen of the new country until you like the new country. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that. So this balance then makes it work. Okay, so there should be no doubt that this will work and you don't need anything else. Other things are simply how to technically deal with the conditioned nature, so it doesn't get in the way of your trying to hear Krishna Katha. Okay? Any questions on that? No? Okay, fine. Life is meant to prepare for death. A long life is not glorious, But even a moment of full consciousness is glorious. One should always chant without offense the potent names of Krishna and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Since at death, one's next life will be determined by one's desires. At least at the time of death, if not early within one's life, one should cut off his material attachments and focus the remaining days of his life on developing his spiritual desires by hearing Bhagavatam. So here the thing of offenseless chanting means that we're trying to do this to please Krishna. You know, it may not be perfect, but the endeavor is to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And that once the time of death, that is the time when you transfer from one body to the next. So if the consciousness is material, the body will be material. If consciousness is spiritual, the body will be spiritual. So that's why, seeing that it's such an important determinating factor, then generally one would spend a portion, or if not all, one's life preparing for this. And we prepare for it not by you thinking about death, you prepare by thinking about Krishna. And Krishna is a shelter, and we have no doubt in Krishna, and Krishna will take care. So he's the maintainer, he's the protector. That will get you into the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? If you identify as a devotee, you're humble, then you can take up the devotional process. And in taking up the process, those things that are favorable, you'll follow. Those things that are not favorable, you'll give up. Right? Then, having done that, then it's easy to see that Krishna is the maintainer, Krishna is the protector. Right? Because that gets you into the spiritual world. Right? He's the protector, you'll have a place within the spiritual world. He's the maintainer, you'll have facility within the spiritual world. Does this make sense?
Right? He's death too.
Yeah, of course he's death. But for the devotee, because generally we think death is as something fearsome. So he's death to those who are not devotional, because they'll be afraid, and he just, whatever it is, how powerful you are, how big you are, he comes and he gets you. So then it's just, you have to respect death, you know. But for the devotee, this experience of death doesn't exist. It's just transferring from here to there. That's there, but that's already gone beforehand. That happens before death. That's why it's mentioning here, once you cut off his material attachments and focus remaining days of his life in developing his spiritual desires by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Is these cutting off the material desires means you don't need them. That doesn't mean that you may be in a situation you don't deal with them. But you don't need them. So that's the difference. Because sannyas is indifference. It's not renunciation. Because renunciation implies that it's yours to give up. So if it's yours, that means you wanted it. So there was an endeavor to get it. But having gotten it, then you see the higher purpose and you give it up. That's renunciation, which is good. But higher than that is, you're not doing the work for the result anyway, so it's not yours. So you don't care if you do the work. You don't mind dealing with the objects of the senses because they're not for you anyway. You're doing it for someone else. And you don't mind if there's not facility to deal with the senses. You have no need from them. Does that make sense? There's a difference. Right? That's actual sannyas. Is that point of difference? Means it's like, let us say I'm fasting on Ekadasi. I do nirjal. Now the typical thing is the person who fasts on does nirjal, and others are eating, they don't want to go anything near the kitchen or serving prasad or anything to do with prasad, and they feel it's their right because they're fasting and everyone else is functioning on a lower level of austerity. But that means they're actually very attached to food. Otherwise, why? What's the problem in dealing with it? If you're fasting, then whether food's there or not there, you won't eat it. But the point is if it's there, you'll be tempted to eat it. Does that make sense? So this is renunciation. Right? But sannyasa, indifference is you can cook, you can serve, you can do all that, but you won't eat. So you have no problem dealing with it, but you have no need for it. If you understand this, you'll understand how to get out of grihastha life. If you don't understand this, you'll never get out. It's that simple. Because if it's just a matter of this family's a problem and it's left, when you find a family that doesn't create the same problems as the previous one did, you'll take it up. Like that. I've seen many do this. Leave the family, go off to Vrindavan or this or that. They're there 10 years. And then one day, somebody who doesn't make the same problems as the family he left, and there you see them riding by in a rickshaw, you know, and living happily now. You understand? That's the weakness of renunciation. It's the first stage. So there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's important. But if you want to get it beyond that, then one has to come to the indifference. And indifference doesn't mean the Western sense that indifferent means I don't deal with it. Indifferent means I have no need to gain from it.
You have to be a taste of rasa to be indifferent.
That's there. That's another. That means to accomplish that then is by hearing and chanting about the Lord. That becomes the main interest. We're just talking technically the metaphysics of what's going on. Is that means how do you say? You have no problem dealing with it. Oh, we lost it then. In other words, it's like this. Someone's dealing with the family and through just time these patterns start repeating. And these patterns, because it's material world, these patterns start to get old. And then one is able to kind of see through these patterns and see the weakness in them, the mundanity in them. In other words, the material desire for them becomes less. You know what I'm saying? Less enough that it lets in a little light. Right? Because attachment means it's crossed reason. Does that make sense? There's attraction, but when attraction crosses reason, means reason doesn't work, or it's not important in the equation, then you have attachment. So when that attachment loosens a little bit, then reason comes in. Right? And when the reason comes in, then you're able to start to see it theoretically for what it is. Right? So that's good. But that should not be taken as that's the end result, and therefore then give it up. Right? Because what will happen is that one has the knowledge, but one doesn't have the realization. There's a difference. Realization means the new value replaces the old one. Knowledge means you understand it, but it hasn't replaced your value. Right? The man is smoking cigarettes. He likes cigarettes. Then, by so much hearing, so much discussions about it, then he understands that it's bad for your health. Does that make him stop smoking? Not necessarily at all. Now he smokes, but he knows it's bad. But, they laugh about it. Everyone's starting to die anyway. Or, something. They'll come up with some little thing. Right? Isn't it? So it's not until it becomes replaced, because that's knowledge, until the value of, not smoking becomes more important, then it's given up. Does that make sense? Okay. And to take it further, if he associates then with other people who smoke, then again he may take it up. But he's really well situated when even he's around people who smoke, he couldn't care less. It's not an interest to him. Right? So that's the whole point, is then within the grihastha life you see the points which Shastra says, but at the same time that doesn't change the performance of your duties. Right? The duties stay the same, relationships stay the same. But now you're working with the proper understanding. That understanding, performing those duties, that will create the realization and that indifference or lack of need that one is looking for. Because you're using knowledge when you're dealing with it, that will generate more knowledge and more detachment. Right? That's how it works, Naishkarmya. Right? But you still continue the duties. So externally it looks exactly the same. It doesn't change. But internally it does. One's understanding. Then it comes to the point where you don't require it anymore. You don't require the emotional support of the family or the security of money and facilities. You don't need it. But if the situation is still devotionally favorable, there's no need to not work with it. So one continues. In other words, one could work with it, one could not work with it. It has no problem. Right? So if it's favorable, one continues in that line as a vanaprastha. If it's not favorable, one leaves it. But there's no need, so there's no need. It will not regenerate again. Does that make sense? Because the root's gone. You cut the tree off at ground level, but then it makes shoots. But if you take the root out, then there is no tree. Does that make sense? Right. So, the most important thing of this, the most powerful element, is the hearing and chanting from the bona fide sources offenselessly. Right? Because we see in the first canto is that by hearing and by promise of devotional service, jnana and vairag automatically come. So you get the major from there. But because of our attachment to the material world, then this process of naishkarmya, where we engage the conditioned nature in the Lord's service, then becomes useful, because then we're less distracted. The thing that distracts us from hearing and chanting, we take that itself and connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? So it becomes a useful tool. What would bind you frees you, because it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is the technical process. You can see that it has knowledge, right? But it's not scary, because there's no loss. You understand? Because the problem comes is whenever renunciation comes up or detachment, then there's a sense of loss. And when there's a sense of loss, then unless we're frustrated, where the taste is losing something, right? Then there's a fear of it. Does that make sense? But now what has just been explained, you can see there's no fear. Does that make sense? Was it experienced? What we were describing, could you feel that? Yes or no?
Yes.
No. Okay. It's not to do with doing everything right, because that's there according to one's own ability. Someone has an ability, they can always do things right, they're focused, they're intelligent, they're doing. So that will give good result. But here it's a mentality that even doing things right, the attachment to that is still, it's a different attachment. Because generally we think of attachment as attachment to things that are wrong. There's also the attachment to things that are right. Because it's got to ultimately be that it's only attachment to Krishna. That's what's right. So it's not right or wrong because it's the good thing to do, or it's according to Shastra, or it's moral, or it's upstanding, or religious, or spiritual.
Self-righteous.
Yeah. It's right because It makes Krishna happy. That's the only reason. So, even that, because being righteous is an identity. It's a position. It gives one strength. It gives one's social standing. It gives one's bearings by which you know how to deal with the rest of the world. But even that we must be willing to give up and be comfortable that we will be okay in our identity as servant of Krishna. Then we will be fine. That's the point. But it doesn't mean that if our attachment was to righteousness, it doesn't mean that once we take up that mentality, we have any problem in dealing with righteousness. We can deal with it, we can not deal with it. The same way as one may be attached to position. One can deal with it, one cannot deal with it. You know, like Yudhishthira, he could be the emperor of the world, or he could be a guy living in the forest with no position at all. It didn't disturb him at all. It's like, we're Kshatriyas, so if we have facility, we'll manage something. At least a village. And if opportunity is there to manage the world, we'll do it. But to them, there's no need. Does that make sense? Because they're devotees. But they act according to their nature. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Is that whole thing is one is getting... That's why doubtless comes up. We shouldn't doubt this. That's why I say the doubtless, fearless method. Right? So there'll be no loss. Right? There'll be no insecurity. It works. If you know what is there and you can see the Maya connected with your material connections, that's not a problem. Because you're engaging those things in Krishna's service. And by doing that more and more, it'll become obvious to the point where you don't need them. You know what I'm saying? But in not needing them doesn't mean that it's dry. You don't need them because you've connected yourself to Krishna. Right? So you're okay. And you don't have to worry that the others will be un-okay because you're still dealing with them properly. So they see no difference. Right? When does somebody see the difference in your mood? When you're attached. Not when you're unattached. Think about it. Someone's affected by a change in your dealings with them, it's because of attachment, not because of unattachment. Because you've done something they don't like, or they've done something you don't like. So it's your attachment to that, therefore you've changed. Not that they do this or don't do this, it doesn't matter because I have no problem. It's not something important to me. Understand? So it's actually the opposite. We think the more they're detached, the worse the relationships will be. That's external. But if it's actual, then actually the relationships improve because whatever the other person does is fine with you. You have no problem. So then they trust you more and more, and that means the relationship is better, no? They know that anything that happens, you're there. And you're there because there's no problem being there. Because you have no issues at stake. These are the seven sisters. I think they call it here. I don't know if it's seven sisters or seven brothers, but these birds, they always fly around in groups of seven. I even saw in Australia the same birds are still in groups of seven. Like that. So there's always a fight because I think there's one odd man out. You know, it's not six, so there's nicely paired up. There's always one more, so then they always fight like this. Say again?
You were talking about Priyasi's circumstance and this growing indifference is favorable. But it also sounds like there's a change in rough. It's moving more in the Vatsalya.
That, you could say, but the interaction would be more friendship. Mm-hmm. There'd be more companionship. Like that. parental comes in whenever the other one has a physical or emotional difficulty or spiritual, and one of them takes the lead in getting them through it. That's the vatsalya in conjugal rasa. Friendship is they do everything together and they're committed to do everything together. They're companions. Servants are always doing something for the other one. That's the servitorship. And they appreciate the other's good qualities. So the shanta. That's why it's generally if there's a problem in the relationship, then anything higher than shanta is because shanta's not there. It's been compromised. When a husband and wife or anybody, any relationship, can't appreciate the good qualities in the other person, you can't have anything higher than that. So that means there is no relationship. But if the appreciation is there, then you can build the other four relations on top of it. That's the foundation. Shanta is the basis. Right? It's the existence of relationship. Right? Does that make sense? Right. So, yeah. It would have that flavor in that you may be advancing and they may not be on the same level. So in contemplation that might have that element of vatsalya, therefore you're being very careful that even though what they're doing is not so important, but because of their conditioned nature you let it slide because you have given up your issues. Therefore you can go on just trying to help them get through it. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like you'll see a grandparent many times is able to influence a child much quicker and more efficiently than the parent. Why is that? Because the grandparent's more detached. It's not their kid. It's their kid's kid. So push comes to shove when the thing starts yelling and screaming and throwing a tantrum. It's the parents' trouble. It's not theirs. So they can just sit back and watch. But the parent, it's there, so they're right there in the middle of it. So sometimes they can't see the forest for the trees. But grandparents just come in and say, you know, if you do this, this is going to happen. You know, the parents, it's, you know, it's all the social, the prestige, the this, the that, the desires that you have for the child, what you want them to turn out to be. It's a whole melange of stuff. But the grandparent is, you do this, this is going to happen to you. You want that to happen? No. Okay, then why are you doing it? I don't know. So why don't you stop? Oh, okay. Finish. Right? But the parents, because of their emotional involvement, can't necessarily do this. You know what I'm saying? In other words, properly applied detachment gains anything that you're actually looking for in the way of even mundane rasa. You know what I'm saying? But misapplied detachment makes generally the kind of more of the social mess we're in now.
Impersonal.
Yeah, that's all. Because this is, yeah, you could say it's personal detachment, impersonal detachment. More self-centered or not self-centered. Yeah.
But that combination you were speaking about before, being self-controlled and sensitive, that being personal, and that's only possible when
Or at least the knowledge, because there'll be practice. Because sadhana means there's practice. It'll be perfect when there's indifference, but the practice, it still can start then, because you know, so you'll try to do that, and then when it doesn't work, then you'll see the wrong and correct it, and you know, over years you'll perfect that. That's why it's like, you see is that, like your hasta ashram is you're given 20, 30 years. Because in that time, if it is done with proper knowledge and practice, that result should be gained. You know, that's why it's given. Because it's just, it works nicely. The ages work nicely. Because from 25, then the ego again can loosen. 22 to 24, it's pretty strong. It's like a more mature form of 13 to 15. Right, so that's where you deal with your ego, but still within the realm of training, like that. Then after that, it's open again for, you know, how you say, being softened by the influence of the material energy. Like that. You okay? So did we catch that? Did it? You know, in other words, it exists. What you're looking for exists. It's there, and it's exactly according to what's being said here. It's just a matter of understanding how it's applied, the proper attitude, how to apply it. Right? Does that make sense? Then these scary things of where knowledge comes and I know and I see, but I don't want to go there because then I may lose something. I may lose the relationships. No, it's just the opposite. Because you're afraid of it means you're not connecting it to Krishna. Fear comes from not connecting it to Krishna. But as soon as you connect it to Krishna, there's no fear. Right? Then you're operating the relationship to please Krishna rather than to please yourself. Because if you're pleasing yourself, when you like, you do it. When you don't like, you don't do it. Right? Isn't it? But if you're doing it to please Krishna, then you like, you do it. You don't like, you still do it. So how is that going to be perceived by the other person? Right? You like to feed them in the morning, so you do. But is that 7 days a week? Right? How many here can say 7 days a week, without fail, they always feed those persons that are dear to them in the morning? Every time. Okay, that's my point. It's close. Some will be more, some will be less, but it will adjust. Maybe it's at this time, but something was happening so that it'll be moved to that time. Right? Does that make sense? It may adjust a little bit. Maybe it happens every day, but when it happens, that will adjust. Or the standard of what's there, or the mood in which it's given. Right? Something will change because it's dependent upon our enthusiasm, our personal interest. Does that make sense? Right? So what we're saying, but if it's done for Krishna, that change that starts to become stable. Does that make sense? So what we're looking for is found in Bhagavatam. Right? But what Bhagavatam is pointing out is what we're looking for is actually found in the spiritual realm. But even what you're looking for in the material realm is still only found through Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? Right? So it's not... no need of doubt, no need of fear. It's a matter of if one uses one's intelligence and one tries to apply that, then it'll work. Does that make sense? It will work. But it takes practice. It may not work the first time. But that's what sadhana is. Krishna takes pleasure in the living entity making that endeavor to come back to him. Because that's Abhideya. That's where Krishna finds his pleasure, in the experience of Abhideya. Right? That's called Anubhav. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Everybody. It's the thing, especially, it's because it's like this. You have a result that you get, but your result generally is identifiable as nouns. You know what I'm saying? This is your grammar. The subjective through the verb acts on the objective, you get the dative. But the dative is a noun. Right? Dative case is a noun. Dative means your result. It's a noun. Not an adjective. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the real thing is the experience one has gained through that process. That's more important if you look at it. It's not actually the item. Otherwise, if it's the item, how come people aren't happy and satisfied when they get the item? No, it's the experience that is gained through getting the item that actually makes them happy. That's why desire keeps moving. I've gotten this. Oh, that's all I want in the whole world. And as soon as someone gives you that, or you buy it yourself, bang, well, the next one is right there in line. Because you want to continue that experience. Does that make sense? Like that. So that is actually where the taste is. That's why Abhideya is actually the prominent feature. Right? That's why Govindaji is the prominent deity. Because he's Abhideya. Right? Does that make sense?
Renunciation is the other way around of this process?
Is
renunciation is the other way around of this process.
No, renunciation is the first stage of this process. But what I'm trying to point out is the difference between properly applied renunciation and improperly applied. Properly applied renunciation is going towards indifference. Improperly applied goes towards repulsion. Right? Because we may think repulsion as indifference, because you can kind of like put the two together as synonyms, but it's actually different, because repulsion means you're attached to it but you didn't get what you want, you're frustrated, therefore you've moved away from it, but it's exactly what you want. Right? And here what we're meaning by indifference means the lack of need for it. And if there's no need, means there's no desire. So even you're in the situation where you're in contact with that item, there's nothing for you to gain from it. So all that remains is, what is your actual, you know, proper duty towards it? Right? You know what I'm saying? So here, if you happen to be the father in the family, but you have no need to gain from the family. But you have that relationship, so you perform all the fatherly duties properly. But that doesn't mean the external, that means all of them. Because the varnashram includes the emotional content and spiritual content. It's not just external. Okay, I went out, got a job, brought the money, and that's it. No, you have to support the emotional needs and the sensual needs of the family. Right, their prestige, this, it's all part of the package, it's all part of the varnashram. But you have nothing to gain from it, therefore in a very clear head you can see what's the best thing to do and just do it, because you have no attachments. Okay, you've done so much and the wife's been off talking on the phone all day and didn't respond, so therefore, you know, why should I do this? That doesn't come up. So therefore, he doesn't do this, and because she was distracted by, you know, it just happened to be somebody was around in town and she was talking to them, but it's a temporary thing, but in any case, it took all of her attention. So therefore, then the husband gets bent out of shape. He didn't get any response for all of what he was doing. So then he's all bent out of shape. Then she'll see that, and what's this? And I was just talking to my friends, why are you getting bent out of shape? So then she'll start spin doctoring it, and then the whole thing is everything becomes messy. Right? Isn't it? Now, if the husband is, you know, he does all these things, that's his duty to do, she doesn't respond, she's distracted by that, ladies are distracted, what to do? And you just go on the way you would. Therefore, then, there's nothing to get bent out of shape about. Therefore, then, when she gets off the phone, she'll deal with you as if she hadn't been on the phone for the last 3 days. And everything will go fine. Understand? Is this starting to make some sense?
How is one emotionally involved but still indifferent?
Emotionally involved, it's duties. You know what it is, what tone of voice, what moods, what everything is supposed to jai ho. You know what it is you're supposed to do, and so those are done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, just
because those who are attached work in externals. how does somebody go on a stage and is King Lear?
Okay.
That's why Prabhupada says it's a drama. Page 14. Or page 15, actually. Right? It's a drama. So it's perfectly performed. Because that's what the other people want. So then what's the problem? You know? Let us say you have a little child there, right? And they're drinking their bottle of milk, you know, with the, you know, like that. And somehow they drop it and they're crying. So what are you going to do? Walk off or pick it up and give it to them? So is it a problem for you that you've picked up, and now, you know, are you any less of, you know, a great devotee because you picked up this bottle of milk and gave it to the baby? No. But is there something you need to get? You need the attention of the baby or the interaction of the baby or the smile from the baby, and that's why you picked it up? No. Baby's feeling bad because it doesn't have the milk. You give it the milk, it's the soul itself, because it's in that illusion, it identifies as a baby, so therefore the baby thinks it needs you supply. You understand? So in other words, you're looking at it that this living entity has this, means this is farther down the line of what we're talking now. Means that this living entity has this identity, and therefore we deal with them according to that identity, because that's who they think they are. You know what I'm saying? You can't deal with somebody, you won't be able to relate with somebody by dealing with them who they don't understand they are. Otherwise, where's the relationship? Right? So they're a soul that's conditioned, thinks they are this, thinks they're a husband or a wife or a child or a, you know, whatever is the position. And so one deals with them in that position. And there's set standard scientific ways of doing that. That's why the Shastras give it. Right? Because otherwise, if you don't know anything, you wouldn't know what to do. Right? And if you know what to, and if you're completely detached from it, then what's going to be the medium for interaction, except for these duties? So duties becomes the medium of interaction between the different members of the social body. Because then it works. If you don't know, it tells you what to do. You do know, then you're comfortable that you're doing the right thing. And if you don't care, then it's still a medium through which you can interact and still be part of the social scene. Does that make sense? But you're doing it because of the personal element that each soul is Krishna's soul, but they're conditioned like this, and this is what they think. That's the whole point. Jara Bharat's becoming attached to the deer, Maharaj Bharat, is not because, oh, it's such a cute little deer. No, he's seeing a soul that thinks it's a deer, and thinks it's a baby deer, and it's just lost its mother, and baby deers like their mother. So somebody has to do that for them because they're not mature enough to live without their mother. So Bharat Maharaj, out of kindness to the deer, to the soul who thinks that they're a baby deer, takes care of it like a mother. But in doing that duty, there's still the thing of attachment to the duty. It's not necessarily attachment to the deer. So therefore the deer gets lost, he's still in charge of the deer because he's taken up the position. He's going to look for it because the baby deer in the storm will feel scared and feel upset. So therefore that's why he goes out to look. That's what they would expect. Right? You're their shelter and they're in trouble, so therefore you go to look. But still there is some connection there. But it's how the advanced person will see. But because you're still dealing in the realm of attachment, there's still some connection there. So the point was, is at the time of death, then he thought of the deer, because he was looking for the deer, so he became one. But we can see, because of his level of self-realization, he was a deer that had full consciousness. He wasn't just another deer. So then, as Jara Bharat, then he just was complete indifference that he didn't even bother getting involved. Because he got involved before on the, you know, from the platform of Bhava, and it got him into trouble. So this time he's not going to do it at all. Now we're talking about someone on the platform of Bhava. If you're below that, don't worry about it. it's for you. The process is for you. It's naishkarmya is for you. I'm saying when you get up to that level, then at some point you have to be bold enough to cut off. Like that. But, you know, that's a different. Does that make some sense? Anything else? Or?
No? 9 o'clock.
Okay, so we'll stop here. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jainita Gaur Premanam ki.